Solomon talks about, and his aim of his writings are the things done under the sun, our physical life here. And he talks about so many perspectives and exposure we have in this life to other people and other events under the sun. But wrapped up in that, and he spends a lot of time on it, is death. Because that's the end of life under the sun. And in this chapter we're in, there's a fair amount on death. Because it is the final moment. All this work, all these labors that we have under the sun are over. And so that's why he's always the admonition to do the best you can, live the life the best you can, whether it's with unruly rulers over you or governments. Live life here and whatever your possessions might be and your associations. So live the life the best you can now. And in reference to that, in this chapter, I just want to go back. I want to read verse number 2 real quick to kind of set the stage. Wisdom says it's the same for all. There is one fate, and that's death, for righteous and the wicked, for the good, for the clean, and for the unclean, for the man who offers a sacrifice and for the one who does not sacrifice. As the good man is, so is the sinner. As a swearer is, so is the one who is afraid to swear. That's really an encapsulating verse. It says there's one fate for all. No matter your religious affiliation or no religious affiliation, whether you take an oath or not, it happens to all people under the sun. So that's kind of how he's began this. And again, we see that sprinkled throughout his writing Ecclesiastes. And I think I mentioned it before, but as you get older, you think about that a little more and more. As your physical abilities decrease, your mind may decrease. You see others whom you cherish in this life pass on. So that should be the inspiration. The thoughts that we should have should be towards doing what we can in this life. To have a good moral life and to make the most of it. And again, it happens to sinners and not sinners, worshipers or no worshipers. So that's kind of the encapsulating verse that I wanted to read in that. Now, in this chapter 9, I'm going to read verses 5 and 6. For the living know they will die, but the dead do not know anything. Nor have they any longer a reward, for their memory is forgotten. Indeed, their love, their hate, their zeal have already perished, and they will no longer have a share in all that is done under the sun. Again, death comes to all. And this is a pretty good verse, couple of verses here. And of course, when you die, you can no longer affect the lives of people. You can no longer trim your life. No more can't repent in life. Those things die. And that's why the living know nothing when they die. Again, as from the view of under the sun. And nor have they longer reward. You know, in life, even these kings have great honor and praise heaped upon them. And guess what? Even Solomon's praise, okay, fades away. It starts to go to the next king and the next king. So those things fade away. You don't have an ability anymore to affect one's praise or honor upon you. And again, the memory is forgotten. The memory is forgotten. Sure, there's memories that others remember about you. But it fades, doesn't it? It fades. You know, at the time of Revolutionary War, people knew who George Washington was. They may have seen him. And those memories were fresh in their minds. That's why we have histories in school. That's why we have the Old Testament and the New Testament to tell us about the history of things, how things progressed or didn't progress, how people were treated and they weren't treated, how the apostles progressed in their teaching. So those are things in history that many people forget if you're not exposed to it and concentrate on it. And so those are things that happen under the sun. Life fades. Memories fade. But again, we can keep that fresh in our mind. We keep that fresh in our mind. Okay? As we do read, comprehend, then apply the principles that we have in Scripture. And again, that's good until we die. And our children die and our grandchildren die. Death comes to all. Death comes to all. Now, in the next section, it's an interesting section beginning in verse 7, where this is counsel. Wisdom, if I can say that. In view of this, you know, this death comes to everyone. And that we should enjoy life. Counsel. In reference to that, of course, we've been getting counsel all along in the scripture of Ecclesiastes. But beginning in verse 7, go then, eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Counsel, yes. Go then in view of that short life we have, in view of the consequences of life that may deter us in this life, be roadblocks in this life for the things we want to do. But again, enjoy this life and enjoy the food that you have. Have a cheerful heart. God has approved those. He set the pattern for it. He's told us, enjoy this life. And no doubt Solomon is again expressing the thoughts of God in reference to His creation, you and I. And that we need to enjoy life now while we're living under the sun. Do the things that God gives us give value to this life? Hopefully they do. And that's the things that this man, Solomon, wants us to understand. There's value in every moment that you have. And you make the value. You make the advantage. You make the profit. And good advice? Yes. Great advice. So remember that. And God has given us a pattern to do that. Now, and also with all involved in all this, God is watching over us. And by His providence, He hears each prayer that we have. He knows the thoughts and intentions of our heart. And those things give us confidence to live this life. Sometimes things come out wrong when you're talking or an action you may have. But God knows the intent of our heart. And so those are things that we can have confidence in this life. And again, be happy. Enjoy your life here. Counsel in view that death is coming to all. In verse 8, a little building on this point, that let your clothes be white all the time and let not oil be lacking on your head. And it may be a little strange to us, but when he says let your clothes be white all the time, those are in their day, and maybe today too, those are symbols of joy and purity. Let that be your aim. Let your clothes reflect who you are. Well, I jumped there, didn't I? Let your clothes reflect who you are. Let the clothes fit the situation you're in. And again, remember, God's watching. And the last part of that, let not oil be lacking on your head. Well, in their day, that represented joy and gladness. And so that's what he's doing with these people. Remember, in this life, have the joy and gladness in the way you look, the things you say, and every minute of the day. Good counsel in view that death is coming. And again, is death unexpected? And we'll see that in a few moments. Death can be unexpected. And in verse 9 of chapter 8, enjoy life. And to give an example here. Here's an example of those who would be married. Who would be married. And also expectations of marriage. What should you approach it with? Well, he says, enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he has given you under the sun. For this is your reward in life and your toil in which you have labored under the sun. If I may say, enjoy the woman or bride of your life. Can that apply to family also? Sure it can. The physical family. Can it apply to the family here? Yes. But he's making something very personal here when he brings out the woman you would be married. And love all the days of your fleeting life. And we've gone over and over that. Fleeting life. Short life. Who knows what will happen. And which he has given you under the sun, this is your reward for your toil and your efforts in this life. Sure, we can toil at a job. We can toil at construction around our house. We can toil at yards. We can toil at many things. But those personal relationships mean a lot. Mean a whole lot. So we need to cultivate those. Especially when you've dedicated and committed yourself to another person. So those are close personal things that, again, can reflect, in a sense, okay, you can see God's love for each of us in that. Okay, care and keeping of that. Any thoughts along those lines, anyone? Good wisdom from this man of wisdom, man of great wisdom. Life under the sun. Life under the sun for this fleeting life. As we start this next section in verse 10, as he's been talking about death. Death comes without planning, exception, or warning. Planning, exception, or warning. I can understand planning. No, you don't plan one's death. Sure, you can in some instances, but generally it's not planned. I can understand warning. But exception is interesting. It's not going to happen to me. I'm going to be the exception in death. I'm going to have a long life. I'm going to have my mate until I die. We're going to be together. My family's going to love me. But I'm not going to be the exception. Or I am going to be the exception. So you must not think that way, because life under the sun is unexpected. And death comes without planning, exception, or warning. Verses 10 through 12. And it begins in verse 10. He says, whatever your hand finds to do, verily do it with all your might. That's a full effort. Full effort. For there is no activity, planning, or knowledge, or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. When this life is over and we go to the grave, death comes all. That there's no more time to plan things, or gain knowledge, or apply wisdom. Life's over. So do the best you can. He said, whatever your hands do, really do it with all your might. Do it with all your might. So from the wisdom of Solomon to our ears is this idea of how do we live life. A solemn, solemn words. In verse 11, I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. And the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to all who men of activity. For time and chance overtake them all. time and chance overtakes everyone with death, in death. And it's interesting as we see this, that those things that the swift, you know, in life you think you can overcome, that you can do these things with effort. But you know what? You have to understand in life that you can't be the swiftest, for there may be one faster. Or in battle, you know, there may be one that's stronger than you. And the wise, there may be one wiser than you. And the point she's making here in judgment, you know, even in the idea of wealth, accumulating wealth, may be one with better judgment than you and abilities. There may be ones with greater ability. And those are things to understand in life, not as a roadblock, but for us to work harder. Work harder. And again, death overtakes all this. Can we put our efforts towards wealth, being the best as a warrior or best as a being the swiftest? Yes, we can. But again, remember that the race is won by those who enjoy life and set their mind to do that. Now, again, each of those people we talked about, death comes to each of them. You know, even you see the great football players, the great quarterbacks, the great Olympians, they die. Their abilities fade. But they were in the prime of their life one time. And so they did the best they can. You can see they won the gold medal. But they must understand, too, that one day that will be gone. And the fame and fortune of that will be gone. And that's why the admonition to those who have been on the top is to think about life as being short, but also think about life as enjoying every moment, not to live in the past. Live for the present. Live for the present. That's what Solomon's admonishing us to do in this life. We're here in this assembly this morning, and we'll have opportunities to consider Christ, consider the sacrifice. During prayers, we keep our mind concentrated on that prayer, on those activities we go through, on the lesson that will be taught this morning in services. Those things are important. Dare I say, greatly important. Because they strengthen us, don't they, to serve. They strengthen us to value each moment. Because at 12:30 today, the service is over. And you may your mind on something else. But again, we don't have to reflect on the things that are eternal and reflect on the things that can give us joy in this life. Now, in verse 12, moreover, he begins, moreover, man does not know his time to die. Like a fish caught in a treacherous net, and birds trapped in a snare. So, the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. Time of death is unexpected, isn't it? And it's an evil to the man because he does not foresee sudden death. And these are interesting, too. It may be a nod to a procrastination in life. That we can take care of ourselves with our bodies, whether it's exercise or intake we have. We may procrastinate in expressing to our mate the great affection we have for them and sharing this life. Do it now, because death can come suddenly. Because we do not know the time that will pass on. I was eating dinner, lunch, a couple of days ago at a restaurant. And the people we were sitting next to, we started talking with them. And yeah, he noticed that I was eating salmon. And he said, why are you eating salmon? I said, well, it's healthy. It's good for you when you had heart issues before. And he said, you know, I've heard that. So yeah, I had a stent, over 10 years ago. And then he said, you know what I was doing in January? I said, what? I had 5 stents, last month. And he's eating beef and he's eating all kinds of things there. He said, well, I'm going to get to eating what I should eat. So do things now that you can do now to help yourself. That's just one instance. But if you know to do right, if you know to love your wife, if you know to participate in the things that are correct and right in work or at this building, do them now, because you don't know. In verse 13 starts another section. Quiet wisdom is better but rejected by fools. In 9:13 through 18. Quiet wisdom. We'll see this develop here in these next few verses, that one doesn't have to be loud and boisterous. One doesn't have to be overbearing in dispersing wisdom and advising others. Advise yourself, especially advising others. So quiet wisdom is better but rejected by fools. Verse 13, all this I came to see as wisdom under the sun. This low-key, quiet wisdom. And it impressed me. Verse 14, here's an example of quiet wisdom. Example of quiet wisdom. What can it accomplish? What can it lead to which is good? Wisdom leads to what is good. And in verse 14, there was a small city with few men in it, and a great king came to it, surrounded it, and constructed large siege works against it. Who had the advantage in conquering the city? The great king, didn't he? It appeared that his wisdom was placed in the great siege works and the great army that he had and in the tactics that he was going to use for this, overcome this city. But what's interesting about this, in verse 15, as an example, but there was found in it a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. He defeated the great king and his armies, but he was wise, but he was poor. He didn't have the stature, didn't have the pedigree. And that great king was defeated. Verse 16. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. That's exactly right. It's correct. But, he says in verse 16, the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. Why is that? After the battle was over, he had more wise things to say in a quiet mode. And what's the result of that? Well, verse 17. The words of the wise heard in quietness are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Have you seen people try to make a point, especially in politics lately, try to make a point, to persuade people with loud words, even shouting. And that impresses people. And they would tend to follow that person because they're loud. But when you examine what they say, it is a lot of bombast. It's a lot of shouting. But where's the substance inside what they're saying? Well, the substance really has no meaning. It has no conclusion to it. It's not based on facts. But people follow one who is loud, as opposed to this quiet man who had the wisdom that proved itself that it can accomplish the task set before it. That's a good task. Serve people. Now, yes. And it's interesting, when I listen to this great loud voice with no real substance in it, who's the fool? Both. And so that's the idea that God has given us the mentality and the opportunity to examine things and to seek that wisdom within the words that we hear. I'm not saying sometimes that maybe one is loud. But again, don't let that persuade you. Don't let catchy sayings persuade you. Don't let things that pull on your heartstrings. Look at the facts of a matter. So he's saying quiet wisdom can accomplish much. Imagine if the people in this city would have listen to this quiet wisdom from this man, from this poor man, throughout the days that followed the battle. Things would have been good for them. So these are things that Solomon has seen in his life. And I don't know if Solomon acted that way. I tend to think he didn't. Can you intimidate people with loudness? You sure can, can't you? Sure can. And when you're intimidated, look at what's behind it. Don't react to it, okay, in a manner that would show anger or unwise actions. Yes, sir. And Linda's quoted, a gentle answer turns away wrath. It certainly does, doesn't it? Okay? And the wrath is, may not be on them, it'll be on you. Especially when you're talking about kings that react suddenly, that know that they have all the power, or a government to be that way. Yes, Josh?
So this story, it has a proverb in it, but it also has the Ecclesiastes view, the vanity view, because you have this ruler who gets this powerful king who gets defeated by a small leader, a quiet man, a poor wise man, but he doesn't get remembered. You think, wow, this wisdom that can defeat armies, this poor wise man who can advise this small city to defeat this great ruler, that's the answer. Mankind should follow that pattern, but it doesn't get remembered. It's the vanity of even having wisdom to defeat great rulers. It still doesn't stick. And you brought it up. People are still doing it today. Shouting, trying to be bombastic and, you know, use that method rather than quiet, pure, good wisdom. Even to today, even back then, it doesn't have the lasting effect of changing the way mankind works.
Yep. The louder I talk, that must mean I have more wisdom. Not necessarily, is it? Again, this is a point of wisdom from this man of wisdom. Yes, ma'am. Dawn saying, we have a responsibility also, a great responsibility, to not let pride, our positions, cause us to belittle someone else. And there's methods to do that. But are they good methods? Does it promote harmony in the office? Does it promote anger one to another? Again, just let's be careful of our emotions sometimes, or facial expressions, or whatever it is, how we treat other people. Would we like to be treated the same that we treat other people? Or, see, so it can come back in a boomerang effect on us. Good point. Good point, Dawn. Verse 18. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. You can have a great army, well equipped. But again, if your tactics are wrong, if you do study these world wars and other wars, if your tactics are wrong, you can lose a battle. You know you got all the equipment. And what's interesting about that is we noticed in the previous chapters, especially 3, that the winner of a war, whether you win or lose, can it be controlled by weather? If I got great mechanized units, tanks, but the weather is bad, they bog in the mud, am I going to lose the war? Who's involved in all that weather? Who's involved in winning a war or losing a war? I'm not saying that God gives a win or a loss to decide. I'm saying that God's will is going to be done in providence. So that's one of the main points, too, that Solomon expresses to us, that God's will is going to be done in whatever situation. And it may not be immediate. You may not see it. Those are things that God controls. God controls. Now, how does a sinner destroy much good? Well, he can do it a few ways. He can take that wisdom and he can undo it. He can dilute it. He can erase it. What good people start. So in their arrogance, or the procrastination, or whatever it is, a fool can destroy good works. Okay? And so that's something you need to watch out to.
Love, faith, purity, show yourself an example of those who believe.
to build on that point that Linda just said, the Apostle Paul, sure he had conflicts. And we see in the 2 Corinthians letter that he's combating. People said, you're not really an apostle. And by implication is, we don't need to follow you. But did he strike them dead? Did he try to reason with them in restating the arguments that they used against him? Yes, he did. Sure, he confronted them, the Corinthians and these people that questioned his apostleship. But he still stayed on course. Didn't compromise the things that are right and wrong. Again, always to teaching. Always to teaching. Always being an example. And no doubt with his life threatened, he persevered in that to the end. Persevered to the end. Those are great examples we can have of that. And the questions. Yes, sir.
Before you get to the questions, just obviously, the setting here in Solomon is out of here before Christ. Those that I'm just sitting here thinking about your comment, thinking the study was good, and that would apply to other rulers, for example, today. Here's politics. So here's a ruler. Lawmaker, senator, congressman. Because they talk loud and engage in antics doesn't mean they have wisdom. And if they had wisdom, they were confident in it, they wouldn't need to do that. Here's a church. Here's a ruler. He's a reverend. He's been to college. And so he talks loud and does a lot of antics. He don't need to do that. He's got the truth. It's quite easy to explain what the truth is. But people are moved by the loud voice and demonstration, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, some so-called gospel preachers have endorsed that antics, that is preaching the word. But here's a family, got a roof, a husband. He gets to shine, raises his voice, flies, throws his hands in the air. You don't need to do that, he's got wisdom. He can explain it. So he's trying to assert his rule by all these, the loudness of his voice and antics. And the wife is the same thing with the children. So rulers in various areas, would this not apply across the board? And sometimes the loud voices, the antics, are because we're aware we don't have the wisdom and think that that will cause people to accept it. What we need to do is examine what we believe, tell someone to make sure it gets right, and let them judge for themselves.
Steve used the word antics. That's a good word. That those things in life that seem to persuade people, or you want to persuade people, it can do in politics, it can be in families, it can be one member to another, because they don't really have the ability, or the study, or the advanced teaching, or minor teaching, to deal with conflicts, to deal with error, to deal with, not even that, bad choices. And our game and our goal is always to deal with those things that give good things in life. And that wisdom that will promote things that build the family, that build the church, that build a good work environment. And when you see the reverting to antics to make those points, whether in politics, family, or whatever it is, or even in the preaching of the gospel, some preachers may resort to antics to impress the audience. So just be aware of that. And it's not a And you can be wise or quiet wisdom when a young preacher may get involved in that. And you can have the quiet wisdom to talk with them about that. And whether it takes or not, it's up to them. I certainly need to prepare yourself for that. In class, is it trying to pin the teacher? Or like Steve's saying, sometimes you have a question, why not have quiet wisdom later on in a phone call or a text? To say, did you mean to say this? Okay. In my case, there are things I don't mean to say, but it happens. So those kind of things can be aired personally. Because if you're teaching error, that needs to be dealt with, you know, publicly. But again, appreciate your time. Chapter 10, three more classes, 10, 11, 12. Okay? So appreciate you on Wednesday.